Welcome to the Pop Culture Palace Presents podcast, the official show for the Pop Culture Palace website. Every other week on this feed, you will find an episode from a rotating group of shows. This week, we bring you Pop Culture Palace Presents, Episode 11, Comic Book Ages Part 4, The Bronze Age. I'm your host, Al Sedano, and thank you for joining us once again as we take a look at the different ages of comic books. This episode, we are covering the Bronze Age, and while there may be some debate about when it stops and starts, pretty much everyone agrees that the 1970s make up the bulk of it. Now, in case you have forgotten, or for some reason are just jumping onto this episode and skipping the first three parts, my co-hosts are John M. Wilson, W. Blaine Dowler, and Brian Zeno. Links to John's Make Ours Marvel podcast, Blaine's Bureau 42 podcast network, as well as the first three parts of this series, can be found in the show notes. Brian currently does not have his own show, but he and John are my regular rotating co-hosts on my other show, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock, and Thanos podcast.
It's midnight, the podcasting hour. Hello, listeners. It's your friend, PJ Frightful. That's PJ, as in podcast jockey, and I'm dropping dreadful new episodes every 2 weeks. When the clock strikes midnight, the podcasting hour shines a candle on the dark corners of DC Comics, those supernatural sagas of Swamp Thing, Deadman, The Spectre, and more. The podcasting hour. It's a rotating anthology series boasting the terrifying talents of Ryan Daly, Rob Kelly, Paul Hicks, Ben Avery, Doug Zavisha, and other unfortunate souls. Prepare for the unexpected, open a doorway to nightmare, and enter the houses of mystery and secrets. The moon is full, and the dark spirits are rising. For it's midnight, the podcasting hour. Coming this Halloween, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Beware.
Alright, well, that's our Silver Age, so let's go, I think, so John, let's start with you. What's after the Silver Age? What comes next?
Well, we consider our periodic table of alchemical elements, and we go from silver to bronze. To me, the Bronze Age is a movement to recognize that these comics really are not just for kids. I mean, that was mentioned a bit with the Silver Age, and I agree. But you have a lot more of an awareness of the world coming into comics, especially over at DC. A move towards what they now call, or even at the time, called relevance storytelling, bringing current social issues, really making comics super political in a way that Twitter would bitch about no end if it were alive back then.
Wow.
But bringing race and class and socioeconomic status and all those things that tend to divide us as people and making them story points, and showing people crossing those divides and reaching across the barriers and joining together as people. Lois Lane has her infamous I am curious black issue. The Daily Planet gets its first black reporter with Dave Stevens. You have Green Lantern and Green Arrow and all that other stuff. Over at Marvel, you know, Marvel's Silver Age is, Bronze Age move is a bit harder for me to pin down. But certainly the death of Gwen Stacy over at Spider-Man is kind of a major moment of emotional maturity, I guess, for that comic story. Anyway, so all these things are happening. Also, the Bronze Age introduces a lot of horror and monster elements. They start pushing that comics code a bit more and I think the people working at the comics could start to care a bit less. But in any case, to me, this is the Bronze Age. When does it start? Gosh. Some starting points would be when the entire editing house over at Superman changed over, which is most visibly characterized by Superman 233, which has a big giant number one on the cover, even though it's not an issue number one, has Superman burst into Kryptonite chains because he loses Kryptonite. And also, I think the launch of or the first Swamp Thing story probably helps indicate a Bronze Age. So, yeah.
So about like 71-ish, you're saying?
Yeah, 71. End of 70 going into 71.
Okay. Blaine?
I was also going to go with 71 because, again, that is the shift where the Comics Code Authority starts to lose its ground. One of the major stories I would point to contributing to that coming from Spider-Man is not the death of Gwen Stacy. It's the three-issue arc that was requested of Stan Lee by the U.S. government.
Yes.
To show the problems with drugs, because the Comics Code Authority said no drug use of any kind. Where Stan Lee said the government just asked me to do a story that makes it clear that drugs are bad. So okay. It's very much an anti-drug story. And when he published Spider-Man issues 96 through 98 with Martin Goodman's permission, who's the actual publisher, but when he published those three in the anti-drug story with the Comics Code Authority stamp of approval removed and it didn't change the sales, that's when the Comics Code Authority, I think, had the wake-up call that said, okay, there either needs to be some give and take here or they're just going to walk away because clearly some of these titles can survive without us. That and just the happy accident of Marv Wolfman's name when they couldn't be... I mean, DC wasn't putting credits in for writers, so when the writers were trying to fight for the same credits that Marvel had been doing since the Stan and Jack FF number one, you know, actually telling people who created this with the formal credit box, that one of Marv Wolfman's characters said, you know, yeah, this was a whispering Wolfman told me this story. And they had to fight to have that in there, and they actually had to edit it to give him credit because they weren't allowed to have Wolfman in the dialogue because werewolves were not allowed. So actually had to have no written by Marv Wolfman, and they had to prove to the Comic Code Authority people, that's not a pen name. This is his birth certificate name. This is who he actually is.
You can't block him.
Yeah, so I think that's when it pushed back. So the Bronze Age, I'm in almost total agreement with John, aside from just which Spider-Man story has the most emphasis here. It's when they started telling the socially relevant stories. The Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams run on Green Lantern, where Green Arrow was in there as a secondary character, and they were combined into one book. So you had your very right-wing Green Lantern and your left-wing Green Arrow. And it wasn't preachy, but it was really looking at both sides of the issue. I would say more often than not, Green Arrow won the debates because both creators happened to be left-wing. But the cases made by both of them were clearly heard. And you could hear the pros and cons of both sides. And if you hear Neil Adams on Word Balloon, you'll hear that the storyline in that where Speedy, Green Arrow sidekick, has a drug abuse problem was actually pitched prior to the Spider-Man story being published, but was kiboshed by editorial because of the Comics Code Authority. And then when the Spider-Man story came out, Neil Adams went back and said, hey, look, they're doing it. They got away with it. DC was a little more aligned to the Comics Code Authority, so they had to give and take and negotiate with them to say, well, no, we need to do it. And that redefinition of the Comics Code Authority came out in 1971 where they loosened it up to say, okay, you now can have stories about drug use if the drug use is clearly a bad thing. You now can have corrupt politicians if you make it crystal clear that they are the exception and not the rule. And things like that that allow for more realism in stories about people who could fly through the sky and shoot laser beams out of their eyes. But something where, you know, once you've been given the powers, you can write stories that are a better fit for how the world would react to them. And also, like John said, that loosening the Comic Code Authority allowed things like Frankenstein and Dracula and the Wolfman and the classic monsters to come back, although zombies were still off the table. So, you know, Zuvembis and the Avengers. Things like that. Yeah, to me, that's where it kicks off, is that first hard push where the Comics Code Authority redefined the rules so that the creators could tell stories that weren't just, you know, hey, how is Superman going to prevent Lois Lane from proving he and Clark Kent are the same person this month? Into, okay, how do we deal with racial discrimination when you've got Jon Stewart as your Green Lantern now? And things like that.
Brian?
Well, I really don't know how much I can add. I mean, I think both John and Blaine got it pretty much exactly right. The only thing I can add to what they said regarding the increased social consciousness, that is very clearly part of the Bronze Age. But for me, and you stole my thunder a little there, Blaine, because you were the first to get to Adams and O'Neill and Snowbirds Don't Fly and all that. What I was going to say is, for me, as much as it is a social trend, it's also a sort of a look and a feel. To me, comics of the 70s look and feel significantly different from comics of the 60s. And so for me, I'm actually going to put the start. I mean, not that I want to get too hung up on, you know, beginnings and endings per se, but for me, I actually start the Bronze Age in my head in late 69 when Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams first hook up. Detective Comics number 395, which was cover dated January 70. So we're going to say it was probably out in the, you know, fall of 1969. And that,
you realize,
to me,
that hookup means something very different now, right?
Yes, I do. But artistic, employment wise, they hooked up. But yeah.
Otherwise, who knows?
I do not know what these. This was the late 60s, man. Anything went, dude. No, but my point is that I've read that book, actually, Paint a Picture of Peril. And that's the first book, the earliest book I've read that looks and feels like a 1970s comic to me, that is of a similar kind of piece to the mid-70s Len Wein, Ross Andrew, Amazing Spider-Man.
Brian? Are you there?
There
we go.
Yeah? Hello?
Sorry, I lost you there for a second. You said...
Oh, okay.
You were mute between Spider-Matt and the hello?
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I will repeat myself then. That Detective Comics from 69, that's the first comic that feels, looks and feels of a piece with the Len Wein, Ross Andrew, Amazing Spider-Man stuff that I started to read as a child in the mid-70s, that were the first earliest comics that I ever read. Also the Incredible Hulks that I was reading in a little later on in the 70s with the Sal Buscema art. Those to me are the touchstones, and those to me are the epitome of the Bronze Age. And so when I try and go back as far as I can and not have it be something that feels and looks different, I would say, to me, it's very much O'Neill and Adams, but I would say it's actually the earliest Batman work. And then, of course, when the social consciousness starts to creep in with the Green Arrow, Green Lantern stuff, and then you start getting similar stuff happening in Spider-Man. And then, as John pointed out, the death of Gwen Stacy, you know, oh my God, you could actually kill a long running a major character, a love interest, even by 1973 standards. That was hardcore, right? As the comic book audience matured, the storytelling had to mature. A couple years back, a buddy of mine and I, we had a Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos podcast. And sadly, it didn't last as long as I would have liked for external reasons. But we were about 8 issues in when it suddenly dawned on us that in the early 60s, they were doing a war comic in the early 60s. And we're trying to figure out, why are we so unhappy with the way these war comics are presented? And about 7-8 issues in, it dawned on us, it's because the dynamics of this group that we're being presented as the most crack commando team in the world, they're really, in reality, when you look at it, they are a gang of teenage hooligans. They're like, you know, the reader and his buddies, you know, driving around town in a Jeep instead of a jalopy and, you know, getting into fist fights with Nazis instead of rival gangs. But still in all, this was just a teenage gang. And I think, you know, that was supposed to reflect the world of the readers to the readers at that point. Now we're 10 years later. The comic book audience is older. So the ways in which these stories deal with the outside world has to be more mature as well. And I think that was that to me is everything about the Bronze Age summed up.
I think that we can't overemphasize the look of the Bronze Age as opposed to the Silver Age. Pick any character who exists in both camps, and there are significant differences. Superboy got Bob Brown as a regular artist in, I think, late 68, and he, especially with some of his inkers, not with all of them, but with some of his inkers, really overhauled that book and turned it into, you know, instead of simple little square images, you have, you know, little square panels with cartoons inside, you have these sweeping images of Superboy. When Ross Andrew got on Superman in 1968, he did the same thing. He brought a dynamic to just the layout of the page that broke the panel rule. Mm-hmm. And Neil Adams on covers is a huge indicator that something different is going on at DC.
And at Marvel, because he was doing X-Men work in the late 60s, too.
Right, right. So just the look and feel, and some of it, not all of it, I'm not sure if it's a majority of it, but some of it is just a larger use of ink.
Yeah.
You know, yes. That ink is no longer just a simple outline of your characters, but that ink is in shading, ink is in shadow, and bringing shadows and shading into your two-dimensional art to just give it some more substance and some more depth to it. I think, just to sum that up, we cannot overemphasize the importance of the look of comics as we go from the 60s to the 70s.
Hear, hear.
Well, before I go on, Brian, I want to thank you, because thanks to your comments about the commandos as, like, fighting them as, like, the Nazis, like, gangs, I have this image of the commandos and Nazis dancing around no man's land like the Jets and the Sharks, snapping yes. their fingers at each other.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, let them do what they can. You've got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're never disconnected.
And now I'm hearing them saying, then you're SS for life. And it's just going all downhill in my head from there. Thank you, Al, for that.
Yeah, well, I blame you, so I had to throw it back. Anyway, I definitely agree. The Bronze Age definitely has a different look. And it's funny, it's like we get to the ages more. It's like the ages become more crystallized because we're getting more agreed on of what makes these ages. There's the weakening of the Comics Code leading to these other things. Obviously, it's a social relevance, and also a lot of soul-searching and, as we called it before on the other show, navel-gazing, though Adam Warlock, Howard the Duck. But also, one thing that actually wasn't mentioned, but I actually get to say something new, is we also have a lot of creators coming in now who weren't just people who were, let's say, like Gardner Fox or people earlier who were writing pulp and they just kind of ended up writing these, or illustrators who happen to like, oh, this is a work I can do. We have a lot of now fans of comics going into comics because they like comics and they want to write and draw comics. So, you know, we have Englehart and Magin and Conway and Jim Starlin, Claremont, Simonson, these people who got into comic books because that's what they wanted to do. They didn't just kind of fall into it or end up being there.
Oh, Roy Thomas, the pioneer in that, I think.
Well, yeah, he would be the pioneer, but he definitely is still, I mean, was definitely way more in the Silver Age still. But, like, this is, like, he was, like, the pioneer. But, yes, you're right. He is the pioneer of that, definitely. Him and, like, let's say Jim Shooter.
Right.
But you have all these fans now going into comics because they want to write Spider-Man. Sorry, John, you're going to say something?
I was going to make a stupid joke, but since I'm here, I'll make it anyway. We should not leave Roy Thomas out, because as a child, his deciding to subscribe to comic books is what helped end the Golden Age, because he was a big fan of the Justice Society of America, so he subscribes to All Star Comics, and the first issue he gets is issue 58, which is now titled All Star Western. So, you know, Roy Thomas helped kill the Golden Age.
Damn you, Roy Thomas!
Well, no, it needed to be euthanized at that point, I think.
Probably. But he's also responsible for bringing it back into consciousness later on, so yeah. Yeah. I think he gets a pass.
But I would definitely, I mean, if I had to, and like anything else, these things, that there's no hard and fast date for any of these. If I had to give a date for the beginning of the Bronze Age, I would go about 1970, because that's when you have a lot of things happening around then that I think are starting then, that are definitely what we call the Bronze Age. That's when you have the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series starting in 1970. One of the things that started in the Bronze Age that you really have before was anti-heroes. You know, you got the Punisher in the Bronze Age, you got Wolverine, and Conan number one starts in 1970.
Oh, and don't forget Kirby leaving Marvel.
That was my next
one. And heading over to DC. Mm-hmm. That's a big one, too.
Yep, so I have it down here. September 1970 is Fantastic Four 102, his last issue. And October 1970 is Jimmy Olsen 133, his first issue. So for me, I go with 1970 more or less as the beginning of the Bronze Age, because you have a lot of these things starting right then and there in that year, it seems like.
You know how I was talking earlier about how sometimes ages tend to die and just kind of like dwindle away, and then eventually something new happens and brings it back to life? Yeah, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, oh my God, was I ready for Kirby to get on that book. I was reading through my Superman comic, and just every Jimmy Olsen is just like, okay, let's read this. Oh, wow, that was a time that I just had reading that comic. How many more issues until Kirby gets here?
Weren't they counting them down on the covers, like, you know, 4 months till Kirby is here or something like that?
I don't know. And I like early Jimmy Olsen, you know, from the, you know, late 50s, early 60s. Jimmy Olsen's fun stuff, but anyways, yeah. Sidetrack.
Okay, so anyone else have anything else to say on the Bronze Age?
The Fantastic Arts is your guide to the Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics in 1961 onwards.
Each week, Steve Lacy and Andy Leyland cover every issue, spin-off, guest appearance and cameo, and more.
And in 2015, we begin our journey through the decade that Taste forgot, the 1970s.
Join us as we take a look at
the departure of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee,
the Kree-Skrull War,
the arrival of Marvel Team-Up,
Bill Murray as the Human Torch,
creators including Roy Thomas, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway, Rich Buckler and John Byrne,
and of course, Marvel 2-in-1.
All this and more at ffcast.libsyn.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Fantastic Cast.
Insert catchy tagline here. Wait, what?
Whether people send us comments or questions or just help promote the show on social media, it all helps and it's all appreciated. So you all deserve thanks. And you're about to get it. And in fact, we're going to do double duty on the thanks, because I'm going to be talking about the social media comments and likes and shares we got for episode 10, which was our episode on the Silver Age, as well as the recent promo that I put out. Episode 10 on Twitter was retweeted and liked by Kids and Teens, Marcella G.H., The Kirby Cast, Comics in the Golden Age, Justin the Buck, John M. Wilson is Podcasting Again, ITG Blogcast, Jose Luis G. Miangos, my apologies for getting that wrong, Gumballhead the Cat, David Moses Le Noir, Issue 1 out now, Brian Z., and Low456. On Facebook, it was liked and shared by Justin Lesniak, Ruth and Dan Sutherland, Pat Sampson, Mike Peacock, Martin Gray, Michael Lane, and Joe Sedano. And on Tumblr, it was liked by Ray Gun Road Rash. And before you're wondering, since I'd never mentioned Tumblr before, no, we don't have a Tumblr page as of now, but there's a Tumblr page for my other show, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, and I did share the episode on there. That's where it was liked. Now the promo on Twitter was retweeted and liked by Durfin Dietz, Thinking Critically the Podcast, The Brokecast Podcast, Christian Damon's Amazing Nerd Show, John DeHaan, ITG Blogcast, Jason Snick Venable, and Justin the Buck. And on Facebook, it was liked and shared by Ruth and Dan Sutherland, Mike Peacock, Michael Lane, Justin Lesniak, and Joe Sedano. Now, if you'd like to get on this action, you can. On Facebook, like our page there, Pop Culture Palace. Just type that in the search box, you'll find us. On Twitter, follow us at the PC Palace. You can also go, of course, to the main website for the Pop Culture Palace, thepopculturepalace.com. You can leave a comment there. Peruse the site. There are other things besides just my posts for my episodes. We got Brody doing music reviews. We got the Buck doing movie and TV stuff. Go check it out. And of course, if you really like to help, we don't have any iTunes reviews yet. We love one. We love several, but I'd love one. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review there. And finally, if you have any thoughts on any of these comic ages we've discussed already, Bronze Age, Silver Age, Golden Age, Pre-Golden Age, do you agree or disagree with what we've been saying? Is there something about one of these ages that defines that age for you that we did not mention at all? I want to hear what you have to say. Send an email, thepalaceofpopculture@gmail.com. That's it for this week. Don't forget to check out the links in the show notes for things related to this episode, as well as John and Blaine's own shows. We will have another episode in this series out in May as we figure out what exactly came after the Bronze Age. Bye. Music for this podcast was Going Higher, provided by royalty-free music from bensound.com.
So good evening, gentlemen. Dentist.
Good evening.
And
I need to say one thing out front here, just to put this out there. We cannot discuss Star Wars.
No.
I am the guy who hasn't seen it yet.
Oh, no, I am one of
the two guys. Yeah.
No, three.
Okay.
Four.
None of us have seen Star Wars yet. Awesome. This is the podcast of people who haven't seen Star Wars yet.
So instead of we can't discuss Star Wars on account of just in case, now it's we can't discuss Star Wars. Even if we wanted to, we can't.
Well, actually, now we can discuss it at our leisure because none of us will spoil anyone.
Right, none of us will know a damn thing.
Well, except the rumor I heard Kirk is his mother.
Oh. Spoilers.
Thor is Kirk's father.
I am your father.
I've got another week to wait because that's my brother-in-law has requested seeing it for his birthday, which is December 23rd.
Oh. Well,
you must really love your brother-in-law.
This is 3 years in a row when we've held off on seeing the newest Star Wars until his birthday, and I am so looking forward to when the dates shift to May.
Who cares about your birthday?
Are they going to do that? Are they going to shift back to May, or is that just a hope?
A new hope, as it were.
Yeah, it's a long-standing hope. They actually, this was originally scheduled for May, but it got pushed back. But it was only supposed to be Force Awakens and Rogue One that were December releases, and then the rest are going to flip to May.
Well,
makes
sense. They don't want to compete with themselves with Avengers.
Well, at this point, since they own just about everything, everything is going to be competing with themselves.
That's a good point.
Yeah, well, at least until they buy Paramount so we can have a Star Wars Star Trek crossover.
Mm.
But yeah, Solo, a Star Wars story is scheduled for May 25th, 2018.
Okay.
So the first weekend in May is their Marvel weekend, and the last weekend in May is their Star Wars weekend.
Ah.
And that's the plan is Disney figures with that 1-2 punch plus another Marvel movie in July every year, Disney animated. So, you know, traditional animated Pixar, whatever, typically in late June, they are just going to own every summer from now on.
If they buy Paramount, like you said, we'll have a long time ago and a final frontier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I strongly suspect, though, that it's with the... some of this might be positioned because of the Fox buyout, but I think that's still fairly recent. I think a lot more of it was their plans to relaunch Indiana Jones are going to turn into their December films.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That'll make sense then. So switch that to December.
Well, it's a good thing they're relaunching Indiana Jones since they have a new Obi-Wan Kenobi actor. He can just play that role, too. Han Solo. I know Han Solo actor. I f***ed up my own joke. Sorry. I'm just going to sit over here and eat pie.
I knew where you were going.
Well, the good news is we can take that joke out because none of that has to do with the various ages of comic books.
Yes.
This is true. And plus, I don't know if Al's rolling yet.
Oh, no, I am. It's recording.
Oh,
it says it
okay,
is,
you are.
So it better be.
And just in case I am too, as usual, on our model, just for whatever help that offers you.
Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, I think this may be a case where all four of us are in the same boat with MP3 Skype Reporter right now.
I am recorder, not, because I don't currently have a laptop. I am on my phone.
Oh, all right. That's this right. is that. Joining us now by phone.
I'm Skype-apping tonight.